Last night was a spotlight game. You had the number one and the number two team in the Eastern Conference going toe-to-toe. Pistons and Knicks, rematch of last year's postseason. Pistons are playing on a back-to-back without Jalen Duren, without Tobias Harris, and without Caris LeVert. Three of their eight leaders, and they won the game by 30 points. Going away, a laugher. Sad Spike Lee, pouting Jalen Brunson. Fun night if you were at LCA last night. Great night to dive in to Pistons basketball. 248-539-9797. I said it's a statement game. Would love to know what statement that made. I think they're the best team in the East. I think it was loud. It was definitive. They out-hustled. They outworked New York. And John, they didn't let up. It wasn't like, oh, we got up 20 and the bench mob's just going to kind of settle down and go home. No, they put their foot on their throat.
They did, as it's constructed now. Yep. Now, by the end of the season, you know, if Boston is able to get Jason Tatum back, that changes the equation. But then the question is going to be, how effective is he going to be when he returns?
Yeah.
But that's a question for, you get to February, March, you get to the playoffs. But yeah, right, look, now, I think they are clearly the best team as the East is constructed.
Yeah. The Pistons didn't clinch a spot in the NBA Finals last night.
Correct.
But the most that you could accomplish last night, they did. That's a marquee showdown on NBC, Peacock, national TV, Brunson v. Cade, two A-level guards, and R-Star outplayed their star. R-Star had 13 assists and was in control of the game from the jump. Could bully his way to the basket, could find his teammates, could knock down a triple. Meanwhile, Jalen Brunson in the torture chamber, zero assists, a whole bunch of turnovers, hounded by Asar Thompson, hounded by Ron Holland, hounded by the Pistons team defense, who forced 20 turnovers, had more than 10 blocks and more than 10 steals, were also plus 10 on the glass. Like, that's a definition of, you come into Detroit, we're going to out-hustle you, we're going to outwork you, we're going to beat you down, and we're going to mop the floor with you. 31 points for good measure. It's the largest margin of victory the Pistons have in a game all season. That's a statement. 248-539-9797. I love this. We have a ton of response. People are buying into this team. They're enjoying this team. Let's get to Bob in Detroit. Bob, you're on 97.1.
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Good morning.
First of all, no offense to Dennis Rodman at all, but this is the most athletic team I've ever seen the Pistons have. And it used to be, who are we playing to watch on TV?
Yeah.
And now every game is must-watch TV. But the person I'm really, really impressed with is Beef Stew. I mean, all these years we've been going, give us a tall, 7 foot, 7 foot one, 7 foot two shot blocker. Well, we've got one, but he's 6 foot 10. And he wears his heart on his sleeve. You know, my biggest fear is foul trouble with Duren and him.
Yeah.
But thank God we've got two of them.
Right.
And, you know, the athletic defense that they're playing does lend itself to more injuries, but we're so deep we can handle it. I'm looking really forward to the entire season.
Yeah, it's a good call out on Isaiah Stewart, because I think if people are just watching a box score, they're not really going to understand what he means to this team. So he's, first of all, listed at only 6'8".
Right.
But does play much taller. He averages 9.8 points per game and 5.7 rebounds per game. Boy, that doesn't sound like anything special, but watch the impact he has in the way they play.
Right. There's a lot of things that don't show up in the box score that he adds to this team.
Right. I mean, he's two blocks a game, which does show up in the box score. And he's a guy that they can use in different ways. Like, he can shoot the three, so it allows him to space the floor a little bit, and they can get more creative with lineups so he can play with Jalen Duren, and that allows them to do a ton of different things on the defensive end of the floor. Let's go to Henry and Flint. Henry, good morning. You're on 97.1.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm trying to call about the I kind of tuned in when you guys were talking about if we need another shooter or not. And I'm not a big contract guy, but I'm just curious if you guys think there's any way we can get Malik Beasley back, or if Javonte Green is kind of stepping into that role that we need.
Well, I do think you need another shooter. I don't know where Malik Beasley stands right now with the investigation or with the NBA. That's the limiting factor for him. Signing with any team let alone coming back to the Pistons.
But if Adam Silver came out and was like, he's cleared, he can sign with any team.
Yeah, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah.
Why not?
I'd bring him back. I know there's a sour taste because he didn't make some big shots in that playoff series. But he was a big-time knockdown shooter down the stretch for them a year ago.
Yeah, but this is a more complete team, and you don't have to sit there and just hope that he is making threes at a record pace.
They are not reliant on someone shooting volume threes. Now,
it would be a nice add.
Yeah, it's part of your tool belt, right? You want to have everything at your disposal come playoff time, because when you get in these seven-game series and you want your coach to have one more wrinkle, one more option, boy, let's inject Beasley in for a few extra minutes here to see if he can get red hot and flip a, between TV timeouts or something. You just want to have as many options as possible. Let's get to Jay in Detroit. Jay, you're on 97.1. Okay, we're going to dump that and we're going to move on. Yep. We're going to skip past that. He was having a different conversation with different people.
I don't think he knew he was on there.
He did not know he was on the radio. How about this? I'll read some of the response we have.
Stop bothering me. I'm on the phone.
Okay. All right. Some of the texts coming in. Cade might be the greatest Piston of all time when all is said and done. Totally fair.
It could be a part of the conversation. There's... like Tom said, you got to have to hang some banners.
Right. I mean, Isaiah is still number one.
Far and away.
And if you want to say Grant Hill was as talented and rounded out his career, and you have, okay, fine. This texter says Ben Wallace and Chauncey Billups were Hall of Famers. We got to tap the brakes. Pat in Rockford.
It's too hard to say that is going to be, it's just like Jahmyr Gibbs. Like, it's too hard to say he could be a Hall of Famer. Amon Ross St. Brown's a little further down the road, but you need more. You can't say that yet. It's too early in his career.
Yeah, I would just say on his way.
Yeah. He is building a Hall of Fame resume.
Yeah. Brick by brick, step by step. All-star last year, will certainly be an all-star this year, should be an all-star starter this season. We'll have MVP votes this season. We'll have, I think they'll be the one seed, but certainly they're going to have home court. I mean, these are things you start to put on your resume, that you lead a team to these things.
I mean, he's still so young.
I know.
It's like he has all the makings and hallmarks of a true NBA superstar. You know, he shook the injury bug, it appears. And ever since he got under his feet last year and got back into playing shape and all that, he's been one of the best players in this league. I mean,
24 years old. You feel like you got a decade still.
Yeah. The potential is there. Nobody's saying he's a Hall of Famer right now.
Yeah.
But the walls he is knocking down at such a, what I would say, astronomical rate only happens in the NBA with true superstars.
Yeah.
Guys, no offense to St. Brown, Sewell, Gibbs, or Scoobal, but Cade is the best player in the city. I'm thrilled he's living up to the number one pick hype. Nate at work. Threw in a Detroit basketball for good measure.
Yeah.
You willing to go there? You're deep in thought.
Yeah, I'm hashing that out in my mind, and I guess my initial reaction would be, yeah, I think he is.
Right. So, St. Brown's an All-Pro, best at his position, arguably in that short list. Sewell, same thing, right? Short list of best guys at his position. Gibbs. 1, 2, or 3 at the running back spot, you could certainly argue. Scoobal, back-to-back Cy Young Award winners. But Cade isn't fighting to be the best at his position. He's fighting to be the best in the entire sport. And the only guys you could put ahead of him are SGA in the MVP race. I certainly would put Wembanyama in that conversation, but there aren't many guys.
No, but it's also it's hard to compare that somewhat, because you're never going to have an offensive tackle win MVP.
Right.
And so it's a little apples to oranges, but in regards to the impact that, you know, Cade is having on his specific team and his sport, I think you got to look at it and say, yeah, he is the biggest superstar in the city right now.
Text coming in. Fun Piston stat. They lead the league in fouls committed per game. No easy buckets. True bad boy mentality.
Yeah, you challenge. Well, that's what happens when you are a defensive minded team. You're going to acquire some fouls because you're going to challenge everything. You're contesting passes, not just baskets.
It's also why being a deeper team helps, because if you do get a guy who picks up two or three in the first half,
and next guy up.
Yep. Pistons showed out last night. The arena was electric. As we get closer to the deadline, I find myself walking a line. Do they risk breaking this up, or do they hang on what they have and go from there? Would love another scorer like Michael Porter Jr. or Lauri Markkanen, but at what risk? Kyle in Trenton.
At what risk, and what are you going to have to give up? I don't necessarily know that adding someone is going to create the issue. It's how many of those pieces do you have to take away to add that one?
There's a humongous factor here long-term that they have to decide on, too.
Duren?
Yeah. I mean, Trajan didn't. He's going to be a restricted free agent, right?
Him and Jaden Ivey, but Duren is certainly going to command more money as we sit here today.
Right.
Those are two guys they got to decide on.
But especially, I think, Duren right now, they've exposed themselves a little bit. What's the plan? Did the plan change? Or was Trajan trying to get him to prove it?
And I think he took a step so far this season. And if the real test for a lot of these bigs is what happens in the NBA playoffs. Because as you go deeper in the postseason, teams try to run off the non-shooters off the floor. Does his game round into form? He's never going to be a knockdown shooter, but is he so good defensively? Is he so good as a guy who can switch and take over on defense? He's a very good passer. He's very good finishing at the rim. If he shows up in the playoffs, I think you confidently throw him a max extension.
But you
make him earn it.
He's proving you can do it a different way.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of what they're doing here. Just the complete reliance on the three-point shot is not the Pistons' game. So if this leads to postseason success,
and that's the key,
then you have to extend them.
Yeah, if it ends up being, it's a regular season thing, you need to make more threes, team doesn't make enough threes, then you can pivot accordingly.
That would apply to me. I think for me, my interpretation of that is they will go pretty conservative at the deadline. That they're not going to get locked down with some other big contract for a couple years because they still have unknowns. Why? They don't want to tie their hands.
Yeah, I think the thing to watch at the deadline, they should be willing to give up first round picks. You know, these are officially late firsts. Tobias Harris is an expiring contract. If it's a move that upgrades you, he would be thrown in for cap purposes. But those in and of itself aren't going to get you a big return, right? Expiring contracts and late first round picks aren't going to get you a big return.
If they want, that's
how you'd add a shooter who could be in the top, you know, eight or nine of your rotation. You want to get bolder, you want to get bigger, then you'd have to break up some of the younger pieces. It's 97.1. It's Evan Roberts in New York. So what does that make the Knicks?
Tiny.
Loved pouting Jalen Brunson going to the TV timeout, or sad Spike Lee courtside. Loved the way the Pistons played last night, and that is a statement made. The best team in the East are Detroit Pistons. Tatum comes back. We can revisit this later, but right now the Pistons are the best team in the East, and they do it with defense. They do it with a deep group. They do it with the best player in the Eastern Conference leading the way in Cade Cunningham. Lot to talk about with this team. 248-539-9797. Let's get to Everett in Southfield. Good morning. You're on 97.1.
Good morning, gentlemen. Last night, I was at the game. And it was electrifying. Everybody was up out of their seat. They was cheering. And, you know, they said a few choice words towards Brunson, but be that as it may. I think, as someone said earlier, and I tell people this too, if we had Stewart and Ivy last year, we would have beaten the Knicks.
Yep.
Because all the four games the Knicks have won, they barely beat us. So I think right now I would see how far this team would go. I would not try to change anything, because the point is that we have a very oil machine. You know, keep it oil, keep it streaking. People have talked about, you know, as far as like how Brad Holmes did not change anything, and also Two Harris did not change anything, you know, with the Tigers. But with this one, I'm very confident. I see us going to the ECF, Eastern Conference Finals.
Yep.
We may lose, but I just see us going to even ECF. I would not be surprised if this team may go to the finals. I'm just not. This team is playing like a different type of basketball. Old school basketball with a mixture of the new school. the Bad Boys mixture of as far as the going to work guys. This is what we have.
All right,
that's
so
all I have to say.
I know, Everett, you don't want to mess up with the chemistry. You don't want to add anybody or take anybody away. And if you believe that they're a team that should be in the Eastern Conference Finals or a team that makes it to the NBA Finals, how do they match up with Oklahoma City or San Antonio? Are you at a point where maybe you're one player away, that one shooter away from competing for an actual championship? Wouldn't you want to add that player?
So last night I checked the scoreboard. Remember how OKC started off as 24-1?
Yeah.
Okay, now that was in the past, what, 11 games? They've been 5-6.
Mm-hmm.
So OKC, I mean, OKC got blew out yesterday. I mean, by Charlotte. I mean, give me a break. I think that if we can play the type of defense, the intensity that we have, I think that we could give OKC a run. OKC, they like to shoot a lot of threes. They do like to spread the ball out. I think with the dogs that we have, I call them dogs because Holland and Thompson, they're like some pit bulls.
Yep.
I think that we can really take care of that as far as the space is concerned. And also, too, with Isaiah Stewart, who hustled, I'm very confident that we can beat OKC. I really am.
Well, look, they're going to play him a couple times in regular season, still have it matched up. OKC did it homegrown. You know, they got SGA before he blossomed. They developed him, and everybody else has been a guy that, you know, that the core was emphasized from the draft. And the Pistons are trying to do the same thing.
Now, I hesitate when I hear the phrase, I don't want to mess with the chemistry, because people were saying about when the Tigers started hot.
Right. If you can't upgrade, you should upgrade. And yeah. I think the question is going to be, what level of upgrade? Because you can get a shooter.
Yeah.
You'll be able to get a shooter. You can trade your first round picks. You can trade expiring contracts. You can get a shooter. How big a swing do you want to make? And the bigger swing is going to involve giving up guys like Holland or Ivy. Ivy's an interesting one. This texter puts it well. What the Pistons are doing with Ivy seems to be the elephant in the room. He looks like he's refound his game. They're giving him more minutes. Does he grow into a guy with a bigger role, or is he someone that you could trade? He's in between right now.
Well, he'd be a bigger chip, that's for sure.
It'd land you a bigger
player. Bigger fish. Yeah,
exactly. Guys, the Red Wings are on top of the Eastern Conference. They won last night. You guys never talk hockey. Another one. You're slighting the Red Wings.
We did talk a little bit of Red Wings earlier. It's just that the matchup was bigger last night for the Pistons than it was for the Red Wings.
Wings have struggled playing Ottawa in Ottawa. It's a good win.
Yeah.
They're in first in the Atlantic. No one's slighting them. Pistons are the bigger story right now.
Mm-hmm. The Red Wings are a nice, cute little hockey team.
Said by one Greg Hargrave.
Time for one more call. Alden, you're on 97.1.
Hey, good morning. Thank you guys for taking the call. I wanted to talk about the Pistons. You know, I think they're a great team. I think they're having a great year. But one problem I think that's carried over from last season to this season is their free throw shooting. They are awful shooting free throws. They're near dead last in the league. And the way they want to play basketball, playing down low, playing through their bigs a lot, I'm just concerned that come playoff time, when every shot's going to be contested, the intensity of the playoffs isn't like the NBA regular season. I'm just concerned about their free throw shooting percentage and why they haven't been able to get that corrected.
Well, that was one my nitpick from last night as well. They were only 69% from the line. And obviously, it didn't make a difference last night. But when you are playing the playoffs and you are playing against better opponents, every point's going to matter.
Yes.
They're free for a reason.
And in the playoffs, things do tighten up. He's absolutely right. It's a completely different animal. I like that the Pistons are getting more free throw attempts this season. They're finally starting to get a little more of that respect. And part of it is they go to the rim so hard. Yeah, you want to make sure you're not leaving points on the table in these games that end up being really tight. Like last year, the Pistons played the Knicks in a 6-game series, and the last 4 games were all decided by 3 points or less.
Yeah.
It matters. Mm-hmm. Let's get to Heather with the news.
So a Michigan family lost thousands in an Oakland County jail scheme where imposters posed as law enforcement and then tricked them into paying bond money over the phone. And now they're sharing their story, obviously, in hopes that this doesn't happen again. So the mother says that the ordeal all began on her daughter's 21st birthday and a drunk driving arrest. So when their daughter didn't show up after the birthday celebration, they tracked her phone.
Right.
And they were able to see that she was at the Oakland County Sheriff's Office.
Ooh.
Oh, gosh.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, it was at that moment, or shortly after that moment, that the father received a call from a man claiming to be an officer from Oakland County. So, of course,
yeah,
they're already thinking that this must be true because we know where our daughter is. And the caller said that the mother would receive instructions on how to post a $500 bond. And this fake officer explained that because of COVID restrictions, you couldn't pay in person. You had to pay either through Venmo or Zelle or through this barcode we're going to send you. And then you have to go to CVS to make this payment, which sounds obscene and strange. But yeah, when you're in that moment and you it can be convincing, I know, because
sure,
it happens. Even though it sounds crazy, it's true. So the mother followed the instructions. She took out the $500 in cash. She paid the bond through the security or like this barcode scan, whatever. And then later, the scammer called again demanding more money. $480 for a Tether device, $900 for mandatory classes that the daughter was going to need to attend before she could be released. So this time, the mom ended up giving the scammer her daughter's number and was like,
"You call her.
It's her fault. Yeah. She can pay the rest." So they did. And this daughter ended up paying more than $2,000 as she was leaving jail to this scammer. And when they finally realized that, wait, this is can't be real, it was too late. They cannot get any of their money back. And now this is kind of a reminder that the Oakland County Jail is never going to ask for money over the phone, right? And authorities say that these scammers reportedly monitor the jail's online inmate listing.
Mm.
So they're targeting specific
yeah,
people. So, my gosh. I mean, it's you read these stories and you think, how can anyone fall for this?
Yeah,
but it continues to happen.
Uncomfortable emotional moment.
Exactly. They take advantage of you. Hey, prayers are pouring in for our colleague and friend, Pat Caputo, after he revealed that he was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. So if you've noticed lately that he hasn't been on the airwaves, he has been battling and dealing with some really serious and major health issues. And he revealed on X on Monday that he's been diagnosed with cancer. And it was a simple post, but he said, "For those wondering where I've been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, commonly referred to as a death sentence, and had 2 other serious ailments, which put me in ICU for several days. It was sudden. I've literally been on my back for weeks. Bless you all." So obviously we're sending our prayers and thoughts
yes,
to him as well.
It stops you in your tracks because, again, we had no idea. We knew, you know, he hadn't been on the air. I didn't think it was anything to
yeah,
that degree.
I couldn't believe it when I saw this article as I was scrolling yesterday.
Yeah.
I did. I stopped. And I mentioned something to Colin and I almost texted you guys because I was like, is I the only one that didn't know this? But
nope,
it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like no one really knew.
And we all have a Pat story. People have Pat
yeah,
impressions too. We love the guy. This is obviously something that
it hits you like a ton of bricks because
yeah,
you just didn't expect it. And then all of a sudden there it was.
So I handle a lot of scheduling stuff here and I knew Pat was dealing with something pretty serious. I didn't know it was this. So it hit me like a ton of bricks
yeah,
too. And I saw it pretty quick yesterday after he posted it. I was just blown away. I just had an interesting little past with Pat in terms of I interned for him way back like 20 some plus years ago. And I owe him a lot. He was a mentor in some ways,
yeah,
just the things he exposed me to get into this industry.
He was, look, when I was working nights and weekends, we'd cross over, you know, I'd do crosstalk with him on Saturdays or Sundays or late night. I'd be working a Pistons game or a Red Wing game and he'd be on after. We'd be over in the gym back there and we'd just be joking and messing
yeah,
around. And he's like, "This would be a great, this is Sports Center commercial."
Yeah.
You
know,
you had one vintage crosstalk with him once.
One knockdown drag out. Yeah.
He's had one with everybody.
I know.
So
well,
you were, that was kind of like you were indoctrined into
yeah,
the ticket. You're part of this now.
Exactly. So we're thinking of Pat. It's Heather with the news. It's 97.1. Hey, 9:02, we're going to have some fun. Our team's not in the playoffs, but the NFL playoffs are set. And we're going to draft teams
mm-hmm,
to go head-to-head, compete with one another, have some fun. That's at 9:02. Dan Campbell spoke yesterday. A couple interesting things we'll play for you guys in a second. Wrapping up our Pistons conversation, 248-539-9797. That was a statement win. What statement did they make? Let's go to Antonio. You're on 97.1.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
How you doing?
Hey, so I've been watching the Pistons all year. The great win last night, by the way. I've been watching them all year, and one thing I've noticed is that when teams employ when they employ their zone, it kind of stymies us. Like mm-hmm. defense, like the offense just shuts down. I was thinking that possibly a trade that might unlock Cade even further and kill that zone. What are you guys thinking about MPJ, Michael Porter Jr.?
Yeah, I've seen his name come up. Stretch player.
I think that would unlock us completely. And like, you can't sit up here and put that zone on Cade. It would just open up everything. I think it would unlock other players. It opened up the lane for Durant, opens up the lane for Cade, and then he's a knockdown shooter. Which, like, last night we shot the ball great last night.
Yeah, and they have the last couple of weeks. But you're right. Overall, they've gotten into some spells and stretches where they don't shoot well.
Exactly, and I think MPJ would just open that all the way up. Thing is, I don't know if that contract he got is going to be feasible for us or whatever. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, it might be questionable about his defense, but I think we got enough wing defenders that we can mask. We can mask that.
It's interesting. Like, he was on that Nuggets team that won the NBA championship, so clearly had bought in to a team that could win a title, but has since kind of been more of, let me get mine.
Yeah.
Let me go play for the Brooklyn Nets, get my money, get my shots, get my points. He can shoot. He can play in the front court. Those are two things that we'd like, but those are fair points.
But does he fit? And you don't have to have a perfect fit, but does he fit what JB preaches?
Right.
And
I think it's a name to kick
again,
around.
Yeah, you don't have. And the other thing is, he brought up, like, does the contract fit? And what would you have to give up?
Yeah. So anyway, we're going to be talking more about the Pistons. I mean, look, NFL season's done. We don't have a college team in the college football playoff. We don't have an NFL team in the NFL playoffs. The offseason is going to be interesting, but...
we're a basketball town now.
But yeah, we got a damn good basketball team. We're going to act like it. We're going to talk about them. And you guys have been great today. I mean, there's been great participation talking about the Pistons. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the Lions, John, we're going to get Brad Holmes later in the week. Dan Campbell spoke yesterday. Said a couple things that stood out. We want to play them for people. The first was just an assessment of the job he did this season.
And I think we would all... second that.
Season was a failure.
Yeah, I mean, and this is not a hot seat situation. This is a team that underperformed. And whether it's due to injury, it's due to bad hires in the coordinator position, it's not addressing certain positions. It's not all on Dan Campbell, but ultimately the wins and losses are. And so, yeah, it wasn't good enough. We thought this team was going to be, at a minimum, mm-hmm. a playoff team. And most everybody thought that they should have won the division. And now that you look back and you say, well, if they just beat Minnesota twice, or if they beat Minnesota twice and they beat Pittsburgh, they would have won the division.
Yeah.
It was right there for him to have.
Look, and what I like about it is, do I think he actually had an F season?
No.
No. But there's no sugarcoating. There's no excuses. There's no finger pointing. Because at the end of the day, he made a bad hire at OC and had to take over. And there were mixed results for the team. Because he had to take on more of the offensive workload mid-season.
No, the way I take what he had to say there, you know, is a freaking F. This is a pass-fail game. You win or you lose. And when you lose, it's an F.
Yeah. Look, there were in-game decisions, coaching hires, you know, that he has to own and take responsibility for. And he's not afraid to do it, not ashamed to do it. In terms of how this is going to work moving forward, I thought it was an interesting question. Play caller. Are you open to remaining the play caller moving into next season? So what do you make of it? How would you feel about Dan Campbell coming back and calling plays next season?
I'd be fine with it. I mean, the offense, whether it was J-Mo, it was just total yards per game. It was points per game. Like, everything went up and got better when he was. Now, there's a couple of games, like obviously the Washington game skews it a little bit, mm-hmm. but over the course of, you know, the second half of the season when he was a play caller, the offense was in a much better spot than it was under John Morton.
And the thing that ailed this team, they couldn't run the football. You need to upgrade the personnel up front, and I think that'll lend itself to more explosive chunk plays, more consistent down in and down out runs, putting them ahead of the sticks. I'd have no issue if Dan Campbell wants to call plays next season, but then I want him to hire a more proven defensive coordinator. If you're going to have to devote more bandwidth on game day and throughout the week to offense, I don't want a coach who's still figuring it out as a young defensive coordinator. I'd like to just hand the defense to someone who's architect a unit that's won a Super Bowl. A Raheem Morris who was just fired, a Todd Bowles who may be fired. I would love to say, you guys, run with it. It's your defense. Then Dan can devote more time to being the play caller.
I don't necessarily think the two are connected. I think he's got to take a look at the defense and say, you know, Calvin Shepard, did we see enough improvement as a defensive play caller? How much of it was him? How much of it was a lack of execution on the field? What are the reasons why the defense struggled after they played Philadelphia? And
well, that's, you know, when Dan took over play calling. After Philadelphia, right?
Did they play Philly before Washington?
It was right around that time.
Yeah.
You might be
right.
Yeah,
right around that time. Yeah. A quick fact check here.
Go ahead.
Philly was before Washington.
Okay. So, okay. When you put it like that, yeah, there could be something to that. But I think whether or not he is calling plays or he hands it off to a different offensive coordinator, he's got to independently look at the defense and say, where did we struggle and why did we struggle? Was it because of Calvin Shepard? Was it because of the injuries? Was it because of, you know, the fact that we couldn't stop the run and guys, you know, the right formations, the right personnel was on the field. We just didn't execute.
So going back, they played the Commanders and then the Eagles.
Yeah, I screwed that up.
Yeah. That's all right.
So, I'm in a haze. I have been in a Lions fog since the Steelers game, to be honest with you guys.
But I don't want to get hung up on one specific game. To me, it's a bigger thing. So around that time, mm-hmm. Dan took on more offensive game day play calling responsibilities. At the same time, the defense took a skid. He couldn't devote it. I mean, he's one man. There's only so many hours in a day. There's only so many seconds ticking during game day. He couldn't be as hands-on as a CEO for both sides of the ball. So there was slippage on defense. So as he assesses this offseason, if he does want to be the play caller, and maybe he doesn't, but if he wants to be the play caller, he has to figure out, okay, how do I do that while not slighting some of the game situation stuff and making sure that our defense still stays in a position where they can get the attention and the adjustments necessary. And to me, the easiest way would be if you had someone that you thought was a more polished, proven defensive coordinator.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, so let's go with that theory where if they're going to hire an offensive coordinator, do you really want a defense that has to have their hand held by the head coach?
No.
So that's why I don't think that one thing doesn't have to be connected to the other.
So if you reach that conclusion, make the change regardless.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I'm not. I haven't reached that conclusion. I do think that there were things defensively that they did not well enough at the end of the season. But again, I didn't do a deep enough dive in watching film over and over again to decide whether that was the, and I don't know what the defensive play calls were.
Yeah.
So was it the defensive play call, or was it the flat-out execution up front?
But I guess when it's multiple weeks, it's on the coach to, okay, if the players aren't executing, you're going to have to coach those players. You're going to have to teach those players, reinforce those concepts, change the scheme, put different players in, right? I mean, that's when it's, if it's 1 week, like Kelvin Shepard came out and said, I'll stand on the table. The ball was not run down our throat by the Rams. What happened the very next week? The Pittsburgh Steelers, kings of no explosive plays, busted off chunk after chunk after chunk against Calvin Shepard's defense that you don't run down the throat of.
Right. But what does that say?
That says you didn't do what you needed to do between games to get your defense right. That is on the defensive coordinator at that point.
Right. But was it Marcus Davenport, Aquadine Muhammad, DJ Reader, Aleem McNeil? Were those guys just not performing as they needed to? You could tell a guy, hey, we need you in this spot. All, you know, until you're blue in the face. But if they don't do it, it's not necessarily on the play caller.
Coming up next, we'll keep the conversation rolling. I have some numbers on coaches who do call plays, and there's a lot of them still in the NFL playoffs right now. So how do you guys feel about that? If Dan Campbell were to say, I'm going to keep calling the offense next season. It's 97.1.
Hey, over the holidays, we had a hell of a cold stretch, and maybe you woke up, your house was cold. Stop waiting for a breakdown in the cold. Take a time out and call Mastercraft Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical. They're going to do a complete furnace checkup to make sure it's running properly and safely. And right now, it's only $79 per unit. That's $30 off the regular price. So give them a call today because spots fill up quickly, especially in cold temps. And don't forget, Mastercraft does plumbing, electrical, and generators as well, all at discounted prices. So do it now. You can find more information on the web at MastercraftHeating.com. That's MastercraftHeating.com.
Dan Campbell on calling plays next season. He's open to it. Do you want him calling plays next season? 248-539-9797. Mentioned I had some numbers. The majority of the playoff teams have their head coach calling plays. So it can be done and it can work. And I'll give you some examples. Both one seeds, one's an offensive guy, one's a defensive guy, they call plays. Sean Payton's calling plays for the Broncos. Mike McDonald's calling plays for the Seahawks. Sean McVay is calling plays for the Rams. He's done it and won a Super Bowl. Kyle Shanahan does it and has been to a couple Super Bowls. Ben Johnson, Matt LaFleur, Dave Canales, Liam Cohen. Guys who call plays. Many of them offensive guys.
Right.
That call plays. And game day, they find a way to make it work. Now, that's what Dan would have to figure out is, if I'm going to devote more of my bandwidth to being the play caller, what changes do I need to make on my staff so that the game day still runs smoothly? Because there was a lot on his plate this season. Some of that might be someone in his ear for timeouts and end of half and end of game. Just another voice to try to make sure they're on their P's and Q's. And John, the thing I brought up is if that's the choice that he elects to make, I'd be more adamant that I want a proven commodity coaching the defense.
And I'm of the mindset, I don't think the two are connected.
Okay.
If you feel like there's an upgrade to be had as defensive play caller, then you go ahead and do it.
Regardless.
Whether or not you're the CEO, and like that's the job of the CEO. How do you improve an aspect of your company, and they need better performance on the defensive side of things?
I would just be less adamant they need to make the change if Dan said, I'm going to keep my hands on both sides of the ball as the CEO and hire an offensive coordinator to call plays. And so, how they decide to do this, I don't know. But we want to know from you guys what your preference is. 248-539-9797. Do you want Dan calling plays? Tech says, absolutely no. Was the offense better than Morton? Yes. Was it better than Ben Johnson? No. The standard is not be better than bad, but be the best. John, this guy wants an outside offensive play caller. So names to watch for that would be Brian Daboll, Kevin Stefanski. I'm talking about coaches who are offensive guys that got fired.
Right, guys with head coaching experience, offensive-minded guys. I mean, Stefanski is one that you got to look at and say, you know, he two-time coach of the year.
Yeah, he might just sit out a year or take a head coaching job this offseason.
I know that there were inquiries about him as I think it was in the Giants, and maybe there was, maybe it was Atlanta.
Could be.
But you kick the tires on all of them.
And on defense, we brought up Raheem Morris, who was let go. He was the DC for the Rams when they won the Super Bowl. Jim Schwartz is available right now. Highly respected defensive coach because Cleveland staff was just let go. I circle Todd Bowles as a Parcells guy, but he still has a job. Let's get to you guys. 248-539-9797. Let's talk to Steve in Dearborn. Steve, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just want to make a comment. You know, most of us as listeners don't understand the rules in football when it comes to the limits on amount of money spent. And I think if you could explain it to us in the future, that would be good. But regarding the Lions, you can only coach what you're given as a defensive coordinator or offensive coordinator. If the talent isn't on the offensive line and on the defensive line, there's nothing you can do to make it better. If it, that's what it boils down to. I would not make any changes to the defensive coordinator, and I don't care if the head coach is calling the plays. You've got to have a center. You've got to have a guard. You've got to have a tackle on offense, on defense. You, without question, need a better pass rush, because any quarterback in the league that is a starter, if you give them 4 or 5 seconds, they're going to pick you apart.
No doubt.
I mean, that's very apparent. So the problem is not the coaching. The problem is the talent wasn't there. We knew it going into the beginning of the season, we were going to have a problem. And sure enough, it developed and we're not in the playoffs. So in any event, that's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you got to have the talent there. And then it goes to what we were talking about. Not, I mean, obviously we're talking about stopping the run, but defensively, you got to apply pressure on the quarterback. It goes to somebody opposite Aiden Hutchinson. And it's got to be somebody better than, you know, and yeah, Hutch is there to be able to stop the run and apply pressure, but you didn't get anything from Malik McNeil. You didn't get much from DJ Reader. You weren't getting much from Davenport.
Tyler,
you
got a rookie.
Nothing from Onwuzurike or Pascal.
Yeah.
And some of those guys, they're free. They're going to be gone.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that coaching is the only thing they should be looking at. I would agree with the caller that the personnel is more important, but you should also be asking questions. I mean, they're going to need to hire an offensive coordinator, and the question about the defensive coordinator is at least worth discussing if you feel like there was more to squeeze out of this group.
Yeah, it's just a matter of you're going to hire an offensive coordinator. Is he going to be the guy that calls plays?
Correct.
Or is it just still going to be Dan Campbell?
248-539-9797. My concern with Dan calling plays is the overall discipline of the team seemed to slip. He had a hard time gauging flow of the game, Marcus in Alabama.
Well, I don't know. So, yes, I thought there was not as much discipline this year when you have formation penalties. You have personnel on the field penalties. Like, those are all disciplined things. Is that because Dan Campbell's calling the plays? I don't think so. It's, you know, hey, you lose, you're down a guy, and, you know, at times it was Khalif Raymond, and then all of a sudden you've got to rely more on Tesla, a young player that you need to go out there, and they've got to know where to line up. That's the bare minimum.
The offense was good before and after Campbell took over play calling, but a lot of the game managing head coaching duties fell to the wayside. He works best as a CEO. Get a proven offensive play caller and let Dan be Dan.
I could see that. I mean, it is going to be a matter of his self-analysis.
Yeah.
And relying on other people that, you know, on that offensive staff. Hank Fraley's been there for, what, 8 years? And, you know, what type of feedback are you getting from him?
Coming up next, we're going to draft playoff teams, compete with one another. We'll do it right after this. It's 97.1.